Welcome back, everyone, to Red Spotlight Entertainment. I am Alexis Soto, back here with the show that brings you everything coming out of the world of movies and more. I am joined by nobody else but myself today, and so this is going to be a rare solo show, and my condolences to everybody involved who would dare even bother to listen or watch this, but we're going to go ahead and call this the final episode of 2025, which has already been such a momentous year for so many reasons. So you best prepare yourself for a show that, you know, on paper, and I'm sure probably to some extent in execution, is going to be kind of rambling, perhaps a series of rants. Maybe we can talk about a couple of movies here and there, sure. But this will be the final the last that will be written about in the year 2025 for our podcast. That is going to be episode 523. There's a lot of places where to begin here, but the first thing I want to do is I have to get my charger so that way my computer doesn't die. So yeah, that. All right, so a lot's happening already. The last time that we were here, we talked about the Avatar Fire and Ash, and we went really in-depth into that film in our last episode, which was 522, and I really have not been able to stop thinking about it. I think all of us on the show feel exactly the same about that, and clearly, I don't know if it's some kind of divine intervention. I don't know if, you know, at the end of the year here, we're kind of closing things out on something of a high note because, you know, this year, it's a tale of so many conflicting and contradictory stories. For the most part, there are these huge swaths of people, you know, a large part of the population have seemingly just not really had any interest in going back to the movies on a regular basis, as perhaps as most as, you know, could be expected, of course, and that since COVID. Before COVID, clearly by the late 2010s, what we noticed was your typical family would maybe only go to the movies for 4 times a year, if that. And I feel like since COVID, maybe it's been cut in half. And I know there have been recent statistics that have been released that suggest that perhaps it is mainly the boomers' fault, because in terms of, like, not, you know, attending movies as often. And I feel we're kind of perhaps seeing that indication. I just keep, you know, anecdotally, either through personal friends, family members, and even a wide variety of podcasts that I listen to, anytime any one personality brings up their parents having watched something, it usually seems to be them streaming it, not so much going to the movies. So perhaps anecdotally that, you know, that data may actually bear out to be true. And we've seen with the biggest hits at the box office this year, whether it would be, you know, maybe most notably among them, Minecraft. Zoomers have come out in droves for what they know. So I don't know. It's a lot of really interesting stuff. And, you know, on the one hand, we've had, you know, a lot of these studios and the exhibitors and their corporate overlords really kind of racing to the bottom to see who can end movies the fastest, you know, still up in the air amidst, all the mergers that have happened. We're still not really sure who gets to own Warner Brothers at this point, which is really kind of psychotic, that whole notion, obviously. But we're still in a standstill, and what that's going to foretell for the next couple of years is still uncertain. And I just want to point out just the absurdity of the idea that this is happening in the first place. You can thank Allison's at Magamount for, you know, instigating all this in the first place. Mind you, what's his name? Zaslav was always going to sell one way or the other, but it seemingly came faster than even he could have anticipated, because this whole thing was struck up because that Ellison really just needed to start pumping out that conservative propaganda into movies, and he couldn't wait. And we're at a standstill now. We're not sure Netflix, we're not sure Megamount. You know, some people say Netflix has the edge, some people say Megamount has the edge. We're not quite sure just yet. But we should not, you know, misunderstand what this means. It would be disastrous. There would be so many people's lives and their livelihoods in this industry that are going to be forever destroyed and lost as a result of this needless, useless, disgusting merger. That doesn't even get into talking about, you know, the normie will never understand is what these decisions obviously have such huge ramifications for the kinds of movies that will be made, where those few movies are going to be released, and it could make a lot of the issues that people are having that much worse. You know, anecdotally, and I feel like you want to think about what the normie is thinking about is how come they don't make them like they used to? Or how come they don't make them as much anymore? Or why are these kind of stories, you know, only on streaming and not so much in theaters? And this here and that there and blah 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 blah. And it's, I mean, we've literally spent years on this show documenting literally all of those answers to those questions. So we're not really gonna get into any of that today because I feel it's just at this point relatively self-explanatory. The idea that these mergers are in any way going to help any of the concerns that people have, whether it comes to how they consume media, or as far as, you know, the price gouging that will definitely be happening as a result of all of this is just not, it's absurd. All of it's absurd. And what also not helping is just the general lack of curiosity on, you know, the part of the audience goer about, you know, not necessarily really wanting to go and experience anything relatively new when it comes to the cinema. For the most part, people have really become entrenched in what they know and what they don't want to throw away their money. They don't want to throw away their money on the chance that the experience they're going to have at a movie is going to be bad. And that, I think, universally is something we all understand. But what that also, while those reasons for sure are understandable, we live in a crushing economy. The political parties and which are owned by the corporations have no interest in meaningfully address the status or the conditions of the working class. At this point, they never will unless there's a political revolution, which seems highly unlikely. So I feel like, you know, we could get into policy about what can we can do to meaningfully address that, but that would suggest there's any desire to do so on the part of the people who have any power, and that's just not so. As well as the idea that perhaps, you know, those who do have power in Washington could perhaps enact legislation to break up these mergers and break up these companies. But again, there is no desire for that to happen because they are bought and paid for by these multi-conglomerate corporations. So there is that. But because we're in this endless cycle, people generally have no curiosity or really no interest in, you know, trying to experiment or broaden their horizons, broaden their taste when it comes to going to the movies. So much so that, you know, lately, especially post-COVID, there's just, you know, only a few kind of films that can actually make a actual substantial amount at the box office. Whereas you have some smaller, more independent kind of films, smaller drama, period pieces, maybe some experimental movie making that might not very well fare well because just it's an automatic, oh, well, I'll stream it. And you know, it's gotten really bad because once a studio has kind of advertised that, hey, this franchise is kind of synonymous with streaming, people generally get the idea that, well, then I don't really need to go spend the extra buck to go and watch this. I can just wait for it to come home. And generally, that was the case. And I feel like all of these moods that people have can very much be traced back to 2020 when Universal made that decision, that historical decision to put Trolls World Tour, whoever would have thought that would be a historical movie in the history of movies, right? But they put that movie straight to digital video on demand to rent and to stream. And that forever opened the floodgates for all the other studios to basically put all their movies on streaming. The didn't help that Disney did the exact same thing with, hey, you can watch it at home for $30 instead of going to the movies with Black Widow and Jungle Cruise or whatever. Or even further still, when they decimated their own animation studios, Disney Animation and Pixar, by just going straight to streaming, so much so that audiences will not come back for original animated movies. If it's a sequel, yeah, they'll be there till the days, till the cows come home. But if it's an original movie, yeah, we can stream it. That's the attitude most of you have. Don't lie. That's what you have. And to be fair, Disney made you feel, oh, that's a streaming brand now. It's not a theater brand. And then, of course, what's his name? Jason Kilar, who was a formerly Warner Media before it was eaten up by Warner Brothers Discovery, which eventually will be eaten up by whatever new overlord will be on there. But they made the decision to put out all their movies on HBO Max at the exact same time, at no extra cost, at the same time they were in theaters. So like The Suicide Squad and Dune, the Batman, all these movies were just like... And so it was a very bad year to 2 years of people just now getting into the habit of having these movies just in the comfort of their own home. And as you can imagine, as we were seeing at the time, that was a disastrous choice. And so we've now kind of created a public that is very, very, like, just unimaginably picky about what they choose to go and watch outside of their own home. And that really, in every sense of the word, has fucked them, because these reliable franchises and brands that would be able to pull in a crowd, no matter the quality, are just not cutting it any longer. And that really has forced a lot of studios to reevaluate. And unfortunately, when they choose to reevaluate certain things, they don't really look inward about like what went wrong. You can never really, for the most part, count on a movie executive to make a brilliant decision. Who you can count on to make a brilliant decision would be James Cameron, who may very well be the first filmmaker in the history of movies to have four consecutive films hit over $1 billion, as is what will happen with Avatar Fire and Ash in just a few days from now. So that is something to consider as well. But generally speaking, the whole point is there's just so many, just too many good movies that unfortunately I don't really feel there's even any sense in discussing how badly or good it actually does at the box office, because it's just kind of baked in. If it's a certain kind of film, well, we know how that's going to turn out. So it's like, oh, this amazing movie got destroyed at the box office. Why am I going to let that really dictate how I feel about the movie? When so much of the public has just closed their eyes and ears to any kind of that kind of genre. So it's weird. But at the same time, there are these little blips throughout the year that have brought people back. And in such an apocalyptic landscape of news headlines that really do their best to convince you that the movies have had their day and cinemas are about to close, you get something that the public is very much vested into, to have their interest vested into, and they come back up, like with Zootopia 2, like with Wicked for Good, although not to that much of a degree anymore, considering the quality did not speak for itself, clearly. And this weekend, especially with Avatar and with Marty Supreme, which individually are just amazing stories, but together they really paint. Apparently, it's the most impressive box office haul since COVID. So it's a really interesting way to close out this year, because there's just been so much of an inundation of headlines that are just like, well, this is the end game, and this is pretty bad. This is how things are going to end as far as movies are concerned. And people are already so disinterested enough, except for when they actually choose to give a shit. And it turns out they were quite moved in a lot of different ways. With Avatar, it just seems to be one of those things where the whole world seems to be very much interested in this, and they have been from the very beginning. And every time it comes out, they don't necessarily rush immediately to go and see it, but they take their time. And as people take their time, it seemingly just, I mean, we were concerned. We were worried. James Cameron himself was worried. And I think for a good reason. There had been just been so many misses in these last few years. Like, why would you take for granted that just because you were so successful in the past, that automatically means that people are going to come back on your side? But little by little by little, in these last few days, it's been taking big chomps. So much so that in a matter of 4 to 5 days, it will hit $1 billion. Some people are estimating, oh, 1.5 billion, some are estimating 1.7 billion. Some may even say it's just gotten so, in some instances, I should be clear, as far as the day-to-day is concerned, it did open lower than Way of Water, but it is kind of outperforming Way of Water now, which is really kind of miraculous. And so you never want to doubt Big Jim Cameron, of course. And so 2 billion may very well be, at some point down the line, where this movie ends up finishing. And that would be, considerable if that is the case. And on the flip side, you also have Marty Supreme, which Timothée Chalamet just completely on his own name and his own back was able to carry into a rather huge opening for a movie of that scale, for a movie of that studio. I mean, I saw it this past week and I myself was really stunned. What I walked into. Now, granted, the theater that I had watched Marty Supreme in, my local theater, was not necessarily one of their biggest auditoriums. But as I walked in, well, not even as I walked in, but as I walked up to the box office to get some tickets, I was half stunned, half not. I guess it made sense ultimately, but I was like, with my mouth, like my jaw on the floor, just like, wait, what? And I think for the first time in the entire year, I practically nearly saw almost every seat sold out. And I was like, okay, this is, didn't make me feel that great. I was not feeling great at that moment. And my anxiety was like spiking off the wall, but we were able to get seats barely, like one of the last seats where it was like pretty decent. And it was, I could tell you very easily that there was a certain kind of crowd that was there that you were like, oh, I can see. And you look at the trades, or I guess the demographic breakdown, social media played a big role in getting some of these people out. There's a certain bro kind of audience that, let's just say, listens to certain podcasts that are not very knowledgeable about, intellectualism or politics. They probably would encourage them to go and do something rather dumb and stupid. But hey, I'm not calling those people idiots. I'm just saying that, some of those podcasters are not very well informed and they lead people astray in very disastrous outcomes. But they listen to them. And I think that got the word out. Timothée got the word out. And I mean, it was an electric experience. The film was, it was a lot to process, I will say. I think it's very easily one of the best movies of the year. And I think it's, I would recommend anyone to check out this movie. But, there's some things about the film that didn't quite rub me the right way. And it's not necessarily in regards to any one thing the movie did wrong. It just so much more so matters as far as a personal level. I feel ultimately, and I think I will stand by this, if you personally know an individual like the character that Timothée plays, I'm not so sure you would be as enthralled with the charisma, as they say, of this particular character. And so that may act as an anchor of sorts. But ultimately, I think it's very encouraging to see that a film like this, which is, by the way, I mean, Josh Softy is such an amazing director. It what it pretends for what may happen with his next project, with Timothée's next project, it's like, okay. It leaves you very enthusiastic about where things might go. So that's kind of where we're closing out the year, which is kind of fascinating, to tell you the truth. I don't know. I feel like, personally, I have not seen as many movies in these last 2 years that I had in the previous two. I do feel like there just isn't as much, but maybe it's more so that there isn't as much as I was personally interested in. There's just a lot of particular kinds of movies and franchises that I just no longer have a desire to go and watch. So due to that, I just don't necessarily bother with it all that much. But yeah, in some ways though, it maybe has worked out for the best, because what I really do go and see and I'm really enjoying, and I do want to very much clarify, normally, in normal times, someone saying out loud, Well, I mean, it was a great year for me because I just saw, I only watched the stuff that I was interested in. I think that this is a little bit of a degree of separation I should clarify in that I don't just watch the same kind of movie. I don't just watch the same genre. I feel like already throughout the many years that I've been able to, you know, I've used this podcast to such a great degree of being able to open up the kind of stories. And my taste has developed to such a place that I don't think it ever would have if I didn't have the impetus to really explore so many types of filmmaking and styles. So I feel like I've already been primed to just, you know, be on the lookout for certain directors and certain genres, and to the point where when we get to the end of the year, I do have a list of favorites that are not all just comedies or horrors or actions or musicals or period pieces or whatever you want to say. I mean, ideally, you would want to have a list of movies that are really across the spectrum, scratching different itches instead of just being like all the same thing. So I don't necessarily worry too much any longer about like, well, am I closing myself off to... No, I don't. Most of you do, but I don't. And I just, I don't know. I just sniff out certain things that I'm just like, not, I'm not going to go and waste my time on. But hey, I feel that ultimately it's gotten to a place where people are just happy that they're going to watch a movie in the first place. So there's that. I do want to take this time to talk about, you know, I'll zag a little bit and just kind of like wrap up the year with some things that we haven't touched on as much. We should talk about Stranger Things a little bit because I feel like, you know, we're kind of seeing something really fascinating happening online. And I feel like there's been a couple of different people that have addressed this. And at this point, I mean, I noticed it almost immediately when the first volume dropped during Thanksgiving. And it's amplified even more so now that we're, the week that this is being recorded is the week that volume 2 dropped and the finale is a few days away. Here's the thing. There seems to be a lot of diehard fans. Seems to be diehard fans that are trying to really make this narrative that it is the worst season of television in the history of television. Like a lot of hyperbolic comparisons to Game of Thrones season 8. And I don't know what it comes across like this like targeted hit piece campaign, but it may very well be Elon Musk's algorithm just like propelling hate just for hate's sake. But I feel like generally people have noticed that there's been a lot of negativity about this season online. And when you dig and to be clear, there is plenty of room for real critiques of the show. I have my own for sure. It seems to all have been drowned out by some really bad faith takes or brain dead takes from the show. And there are entire accounts on Twitter that are being like promoted about, they'll pick one scene. And it's like, this is an example of how, you know, far the show has fallen and why it's one of the worst things ever made now. And I something about that smelled very fishy from the very beginning. And when I watched the first volume of season 5, I was like, this is pretty good. Like it's, I think it was apparent very early on in season 5 that it was just not going to reach the heights of the 4th season, which is okay. It's okay. Like it doesn't have to be as great as season 4. It just has to be pretty good for the most part. I mean, we're at the end already. It's like, you're not going to lose me. I hope not. I mean, hey, Game of Thrones happened and we should not forget that for sure. But season 4 of this show was just simply magical. I think for me, One of my favorite, one of the best seasons of television I think ever made. Truly, for me, that's how I feel personally. And I think, like with five was always going to be tricky. So I feel like I am more forgiving, but at the same time, personally, there's not really much here to forgive. Like, the actors are all doing great. The writing, to me, is on par with what they really have for the most, part of the series. I don't know where five might land. I think currently, if I'm going to be honest with you, five might be probably my least favorite of all the seasons. Which might tell you that it's bad, but I mean, but generally, I think very highly of all the seasons of the show. And I think with five, it feels much more of a long movie than the other seasons. I feel like with three and four, you can make the argument that they in and of themselves feel like long movies, but I do feel like the scale was just too big that it did feel like big in a TV sense. And with five, it does, I guess, have some kind of end game vibes, if that's what you want to go with. But as far as like where they're taking everything, I feel like it's been a tremendous success. I think you're seeing the full benefit of all of these years of spending time with these characters. And I think what the true joy of this season is bringing, at least for me, is the idea that after all of this time, almost 10 years in the making, you're finally seeing all of these people in the same room. And now, granted, of course, and I've seen some people really take these out of context in a really unfortunate way, but when you're online and you're watching people complain about like how badly staged this is, or who even are all these people, again, I feel like there's just this needless hate toward it. And at some point, if you're enjoying the show, you just got to block it out. I just finished watching the second volume of this final season, and I got to tell you, I was reeled back in and hooked for the entirety of the three episodes, and I practically loved it. Like, this is more of what it was already giving me, and it had a lot of emotional moments, a lot of exhilarating, thrilling moments, a lot of moments that you've been waiting the whole show to be able to see. Like, this is exactly what you would want out of a finale season. So I really am befuddled by a lot of the negativity that has happened here. And I don't think it'll age all that well. And I think it already isn't aging well because there's been a lot of, let's just say, extra eyes, a little bit more like, are you sure about that? Kind of a mentality when it comes to a lot of these negative criticisms that, for the most part, do feel like they're being made in bad faith and not really engaging with what's happening here. It does come across like there are just like it's like in Superman, and you had like Lex Luthor had those monkeys just like be trolls and super shit Superman all day long, and so that's what it comes across like. And I feel like, James Gunn put that in there because that's literally what we have to deal with our world. It's rather unfortunate, but I really am loving a lot of this season. In particular when it comes to Will and Robin. We had some amazing moments, I think, finally in the back half with Max and Holly, who I've actually quite grown to like as far as, being kind of a newish character on this last season. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like there's this narrative that it has just dropped off. And to an extent, you could say that. I mean, I just said that this is maybe my least favorite of the seasons, but it's not bad. Like, not even the slightest bit at all. So I don't know ultimately what people are gonna think of it, but I'm excited. I'm pumped for the finale. I think like they've set up all their ducks in a row, and they're about to deliver something truly explosive. And I for one can't wait to see whatever that might be. But yeah, I feel like at a certain point you really need to just do your best to block out a lot of these morons that are just saying all this bad crap about a show that is very much mainstream and very much beloved. So, and it's really sad that it gets to a point where something is so big that people just are like, are over it. I don't know. It's certainly not what you would want out of this to happen. But I so far, I as a viewer of this show and having rewatched the whole thing right before the you know, this season dropped on Netflix, I'm like, I don't know. I feel pretty satisfied with where we are so far. So that's where it is. And yeah. I don't know, man. It just feels like there's so much happening right now that you really do want to just, you know, enjoy the few things that you're in some ways allowed to enjoy before someone comes in there and just like completely takes it away. Especially because like there's just, I mean, what else? But we should also just mention, it has just been an extraordinary year for us personally. I think for me, I don't know what it is, but it feels like every year that we do this, the more I love like this a work of art, the more I just want to sit with it. Like usually, you know, my mindset at this time of year is I want to see every new release, as, you know, I want to see them all. I want to watch as many as I can possibly can. And I feel like that's what I would used to want to do. But not so much anymore, because I feel like whenever I watch something new, I want to actually spend time thinking about it, living with it. There would be some weeks where I used to watch like maybe, I don't know, like up to 10 or 15 new things. And like most of those would go in one year and out the other. And I feel with these last 2 years, with the ones that have really hit for me, I've just been wanting to stay with them and live with them. And I think like those are the kinds of movies, whichever ones do that for you, I think those are the kind of stories that really do, I think, inform a lot about who you are, but also it in some way help you grow. I feel like the more time you spend kind of interacting with something and engaging with something, I think you're growing as a person because of that. And I think there's a lot of just really wonderful places you go when you start to examine the why, right, of things that appeal to you and things that don't when you watch movies. And I think with 2025, it's crazy for me because as I say all this, it's really hard to fathom that 2015 was 10 years ago. And I know I've said that so many times throughout the year, but you have to understand that, you know, we at this group here on the Red Spotlight had been together before this even was started. We started talking about movies really probably in June-ish of 2013. It's now basically been 12 years since that. And a lot of those instances and moments, a lot of those conversations and shows that we would do, they still feel in some weird way like they happened yesterday. And still, none of us are the same person. We've all gone through so much life since then. And all the while, I mean, 10 years, like, in 2015, specifically, I was really working a lot with my good friend Julio and Peter at the time, who, I assure you, used to be far more competent when it comes to presentation and it comes to just overall appearance and, you know, trying at all to put on something good and look and, you know, whatever. We would do these videos on Barely News Crew. And I don't know. I mean, we genuinely had an amazing time doing all of this. That was the year where we kind of like set it in our minds. Okay, well, if this is what we're gonna do, we gotta go watch more movies than we ever did before. And we did that. We went to go watch movies, and then we went and we filmed reviews on YouTube. I was very much trying to go for a Chris Stuckman kind of a thing. I even had a whole setup. God, I am such an obsessive individual when it comes to setups and backgrounds. I don't know, that's just always mattered to me. I've always wanted to like just make things look good, at least make things look as if they're like a clear representation of who I am. And if you see this backdrop behind me, I think you get a pretty good idea about that. And I don't know, we just, I mean, that was the year of Inside Out, Mad Max, Star Wars. We had such, we were so young, we were so starry-eyed about like just the magic of pure cinema and what was ahead of us, what was in store for us. And it was, to me, a truly formative year in the way this has been a formative year. 2025 has just been filled with such rich cinema that it has continued to inform who I am and who I want to be and where I'm going. And what I'm so happy about this year is I've been able to really just kind of persevere in spite a lot of really dark shit that happens in, you know, in the day-to-day life of what we don't get to see and feel just yet. You know, our lives are mere playthings for those individuals in power who every day seem to just get a thrill out of making our future days a living hell or our current days a living hell. Humanity is in a tough spot, and it's hard to really kind of like make peace with that. And I don't think that ever can be accomplished. There are days where I look at the news and I'm just horrified by what I'm looking at. Alexis Moreno, who's a good friend of mine on the show, feel the same way about that. And I feel like, especially with this year, she and I have used this show as an outlet to be able to kind of work out through those feelings. Because in a lot of ways, that's just kind of what the show has become. And I think it's, you know, I mean, and good, because, you know, ultimately this is what we choose to spend our time with, and we might as well have make it mean something. I mean, obviously it always has meant something, but it just feel like this is the place where we come and we get to really kind of engage with like the struggles of our time and the struggles of our days. But I think this year, more than any other year before, I think has really just shown me that I have lived enough life to be able to kind of navigate my way through whatever's coming my way and to be able to really thrive in it as well. I do not care for the brutality and the cruelty and the stupidity that guides most, if not all, of the individuals who are in power making decisions for our lives and the evil that they spread through that might. But what I am able to find, not just solace in, but just hope. Well, it's just that, right? It's hope. I have been in such places in my life that have felt like there isn't much hope to find. Or anything to hope for about things improving or getting any better. It feels like these last 10 years, since 2015 to this year, we've kind of been on this downward slope of things continuing to get worse and worse and worse and seemingly being no way out. It's felt crushing, it's felt suffocating at many points. And yet, life goes on, and yet, life persists. And I feel like throughout everything that has happened in the world and in our lives personally these last 10 years, it's, I don't know, it made this year feel like something of a culmination of everything that had been building up to. And the one thing that keeps kind of like, you know, these flashing lights, red lights in your face, it's like, you got it. You made it. You found what you're going to use to be able to move your way through life for however long that may be in the future. I have had a year full of such rich, memorable, beautiful interactions with all sorts of human beings. I feel so tremendously accomplished as far as what I have been able to achieve thus far. I don't know where I thought or I imagined myself I would be 10 years ago. It certainly wasn't this. And yet, I have been able to find something in this life that has, dare I even say, made me happy. It has been a long year, but it has been a year full of culminations. It has been a year full of some of the days that I will look back on and say, this is the year when this happened. This is the year when I got this. This is the year when I was there and I watched this happen. It was, ironically, with things seemingly in flames, it's just been a year where I decided, you got to make every day count. You got to make every day count, and you got to make sure that whatever is happening in the world, and it is so soul-crushing, you have to learn to unplug yourself from that for the moment. And you have to hold on to anything that gives you hope. And I feel like in the last, one of the last episodes that we did, you know, we started off the show and I, off the bat, I was like, well, look, it's over. And here is why it's all going to be over. But there was just something so, I think, really inspirational what David was saying. I don't know if it was the words he was saying or how he was saying it exactly, but there was just this calm kind of reassurance that at the end, things are going to be okay. They're going to work out because they always have. And I feel like every time I've told myself that things are going to work out in the end, because they always do, if you give yourself that mentality, you can find that you're going to be able to push through most of anything that comes your way. And I mean, I'm just going to put it out there, as far as like the news that we talk about, this has been the worst year yet. The worst year yet. About like, I mean, things have just become so existential about, like, look, we talk about movies. Are they even going to be a thing? People are even going to care 5 years, 10 years from now? And there's a lot that says, yes, they are. And there's also a lot that says, no, it's over. It's done. But no matter how bleak it can be, ultimately, if you can find the things that bring you such joy, it's going to keep you going. So, yeah, it's been a pretty big year. It's been a pretty long year, as I mentioned. And I know that every time we come to the end, I do want to, you know, just not forget to mention all of the individuals on this program that really kind of, you know, make it possible. I think all of us, to an extent, are just so thankful for the network that we have in our lives here. And for the conversations that we continue to have, because as has been said many times before, and will be said many times to go on,
genuinely, I feel like we get a lot out of what we do, and we continue to grow alongside each other because of what we do and what we talk about. And I think that it's kind of rare when you think about how long we have been doing this and how much longer that may be still. But yeah, it's definitely just really fascinating to see where we are there. I will say also that when we come back in 2026, we're going to go ahead and just really hit the ground running. I'm sure we're going to get Alexis back on here. We're going to talk about like whatever she's been up to. And you know what? It may sound like we give her crap for it, but she is doing, you know, some of the most admirable shit you can. I mean, she is not wasting a second. Like, she is taking whatever opportunity she can to go and explore every nook and cranny of this planet. And you know what? Honestly, like, good for her. And so you may wonder, it's like, well, why isn't she on the show as often as she used to be? Well, it's because she's not on the same continent as she as often as she used to be as well. So, but yeah, whenever she returns, probably going to have our check-in and see where we are. And I'm sure she will kind of like share what she's been up to and what she's seen and what she's going to be doing. But when 2026 arrives, we're going to start off immediately with, I mean, it's going to be fascinating to see where Avatar goes and, you know, how far, how many legs it has as the weeks and months go by. But we're going to probably be catching up, as we usually do, with some movies that, you know, have not been able to just, we haven't been able to see just yet. I know there's Sentimental Value and No Other Choice, and It Was Just an Accident, and a few here and there that have not, you know, quite made our way to be seen just yet. But we will get to those. But I mean, it'll be fascinating in a sense to see where the award season will go. I mean, to an extent, yes, but also to an extent, maybe not as much. I gotta tell you, I feel like, I don't know, something kind of changed this year. I feel like in the last 3 years, I had just been so, like, this was my thing. Like, okay, my beat, if you will. I really enjoyed all the conversations, all of the predictions, all, you know, just engaging with all these different movies and seeing, you know, what was going to be included. I really enjoyed following the whole game of it to an even greater degree than I would have in the past. But I don't know what has happened, but, and maybe this is for the best. I just can't bring myself to care as much because, I think I just use this as an opportunity to further focus on the things that do make an impression that I for sure am loving. And so often it's that the Academy and all these other groups just don't really go for that sort of thing. And I also just, I think something kind of broke when I really kind of realized that these people aren't really trying all that much any longer. Look, this is the thing. Anora is a great film. I love it. I own it. I don't know if I would have voted for that to win, but the only reason why it won is because they couldn't make up their minds about which way they wanted to go. Here's a dirty little secret. The movie they wanted to give Best Picture, and I go, you know what? If that's what they wanted, they should have, because I would have been there, and I would have laughed in their face, and I would have laughed at everybody else who takes this seriously, but I think it would have been hilarious. They should have just done what they wanted to do. And what did they want to do? They wanted to give Best Picture to Emilia Perez. If you don't remember, that movie got, I want to say, 12, 13 nominations. I think it tied with some of the most nominated movies ever made here at this group. Emilia Perez was going to win Best Picture. And that would have been hilarious. I would have been here for it because it would have been such... I mean, that really was an award season villain, and so that would have been funny to see. The controversy with one of its stars and the tweets that were unearthed really kind of made it impossible for them to really get behind that. And so they were left with they were left flat-footed. You know, this probably wouldn't have happened. It's really interesting how all this played out, because they really did pause for 2 or 3 weeks because of the fires that were happening in LA, obviously. Kind of shut everything down, understandably. But in that time, there was a vacuum of opportunity. And when those tweets were unearthed, the whole bottom really fell out for that movie. But the Critics' Choice Awards didn't really waste much time with it. And they crowned a champion. Well, look, your Critics' Choice Association for many years has really wanted to be known as the group that influences and predicts the Academy the most. And I will say they got their wish last year. I think ultimately they were in the spot where they became the single most influential group, because the movie that the Academy wanted to win set itself on fire and they didn't know which way to go. Because, as you may find it hard to believe, some of you still, it seems as if they don't really have minds of their own. It's like, you know, you're left with 9 other choices that you would think, oh yeah, just pick the one you like the best. They were really kind of like deer in the headlights, like, well, I don't know. I can't think for myself. I have to go and listen to this podcast, and then just, I got to go talk to this other voter and see what they're going to do, because we can't, God forbid, actually vote for what we like the best. We got to talk about it. We got to, you know, basically plan this thing out by committee, if you will. And so what usually ends up happening is a group will crown a particular victor, and the rest will just kind of have a bandwagon effect where it's like, well, I guess that's the one. Let's just go ahead and do it. And that's kind of what happened. And that's why Anora not just won Best Picture, but it won like basically most of everything that it was nominated for. And I think this was like, okay, this is like the 3rd or 4th year in a row where everything just became about one movie. And that really just, like, look, it didn't used to be this way. It just used to be that, well, if it's the Best Picture winner, it was just that, maybe it won one or two other things. Now it's just like, well, it's that and it wins everything. And when you couple that with other group associations that have just taken on this winner-take-all mentality where one project just wins most of these things, it really makes you feel like you've just wasted your time about caring about this process in the first place. Because if these people aren't going to take any of this seriously, I mean, they sure as hell act as if what they do is serious. They still are insistent upon the holy there art thou holiness, you know, esteem of these people. But when you really dig down deep and look into how little they care and how little energy or effort they put into these kind of decisions, why would you care about them any longer? And I feel like, I don't know, maybe it's just I've just grown sick of it, or maybe it's just me just not wanting to really engage with the kind of conversation that I know is going to be quite enraging for me, that I just have really, in to a large degree, just have removed myself from that conversation entirely. It also just so happens that, once again, they're just pulling decisions that, to me, are just a complete non-starter. I think, to me, the thing that I can't get over is, like, okay, there is this rule where if they're going to include sequels to previously nominated movies, they're only going to do it the one time. But if it's, like, a threequel or like, I say, a part 4 or 5... we're not going to consider it, no matter how great it is. And I think that's just, like, really dumb. Like, off the bat, it's just like, we're just going to eliminate you just because you happen to be a sequel. Who cares about the quality? And of course, I mean, I understand, of course, this group doesn't care generally about quality. I mean, look at what they nominate most of the time. But it is really to me, it sticks out like a sore thumb because here's what I'm talking about. I think we had two returning franchises this year that delivered amazing third installments in their respective storytelling. One was Rian Johnson with Wake Up Dead Man, and the other was James Cameron with Avatar. And in both of those situations, I think there are legit arguments to be made that perhaps they may be the best of their respective franchises to the point, but they've both been ignored because it's one sequel too many, and I guess there's that. And what really makes it stick out like a sore thumb is Wicked is there, which of the follow-ups to previously nominated franchise, this one was definitely received the most poorly. It kind of embarrassed itself in a way because the overall box office that this is going to do is not going to come anywhere near what even the first one did. By most accounts, this was not a very successful movie. And yet, it got, 8 mentions in the shortlists? Like, we're having serious conversations still about having, you know, Cynthia or Ariana getting nominated when they were already nominated last year, as if they're owed a second nomination for the same performance? And so, this is why, who cares? If anything, I'm just hopeful in some small way that they're going to throw a couple of surprises out there, just because I really do enjoy the chaos. I think One Battle, I love the movie. I think it's a deserving winner. If it wins Picture and Director, yeah, it's the obvious one to go with. But it just feels like, I guess every single group, Globes, SAG, critics, PGA, DJ are going to be like, One Battle after another, One Battle after another, One Battle after another. And then the Oscar goes to the same movie that's already won 2,000 times. And that's the thing about the awards season that kind of has grown exhausting for me, is that by the time we get to the end, it's just like, it just feels like an afterthought because we already know what's winning. We already know who all the winners are going to be. So why are we here? Why are we doing any of this? And yeah, I just feel like in many ways, maybe they should just make this a much shorter window, because the season really kind of starts in, the nominations are all December. The awards begin January and they end in March, but I feel like we need to kind of get back to mid or late February, because by the time we get to the Academy Awards, we all know where this thing's going to end up. And I don't know, it's just really zapped a lot of the energy. It's going to really zapped a lot of the enthusiasm for it. That, and alongside just these voters really not giving a shit and just like putting the same one movie to win like all the top prizes, it's just like, well, the last thing you kind of had going for you is like, okay, well, how are they going to award all these different categories? But if you're just going to come down to one movie, once again, why should I care? Why should any of us care? So yeah, ultimately, like, if this is what this is going to be, then yeah, fuck it. Just put it on YouTube. I'm sorry, but like, these people whine and bitch the most about like, what is happening to our industry? And again, it's just like, do you not see the damage that you yourself have inflicted? I mean, if the people who are supposed to literally for a job care about movies the most, they care about them the least, why would you expect the rest of us to do so as well? So yeah, I think that's been another notable change this year. It's just I've just not cared as much really about this as I would before. And ultimately, I gotta tell you, I think ultimately that's a good thing. I think it's for the best, because there's just so much disappointment that comes out of it, and I just think ultimately, as I said just earlier, I think it's just for the best to just focus on the things that are doing you good and making you feel great and, making you feel intellectually stimulated and growing and going forward. And so that's, I think, ultimately what we want to convey as we continue to have these conversations in 2026 and beyond about the power of storytelling and what it says about us and what we want it to mean for the rest of our lives. So that's where we're going to go ahead and end things off here. Thank you so much for listening to my blathering rant about nothing and everything. That's our show. That's our year. That's a wrap. Stay under our spotlight for a new year and a new season next time. Bye-bye.